Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, July 18, 2020. Economy. Midland unemployment falls to 9.6%. Odessa has state's highest rate at 13%. By Mela McEwen. mmcewen at mrt.com. Unemployment shrank significantly in Midland as the local economy began to rev back to life. Data from the Texas Workforce Commission released Friday show the Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes Midland and Martin counties, had an unemployment rate of 9.6%, down from 12.6% in May, but well below the 2.1% reported last June. Odessa reported an unemployment rate of 13%, down from 16.5% in May, and below the 2.7% reported last June. Odessa reported the highest unemployment rate among the Commission's 26 MSAs. Leading Midland's job creation was the leisure and hospitality sector, which added 800 jobs from May to June. What we need to watch for is what's going to happen in the next month or two, especially with Texas having a surge in COVID-19 cases, said Willie Taylor, Chief Executive Officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin. We'll see how businesses react to that. We could lose those 800 jobs quickly. Also to be watched is what will happen when the $600 supplemental checks the Commission is sending along with unemployment benefits, he said. The mining, logging, and construction sector, which includes oil and gas, continues to dominate the region, he said, as is to be expected in the nation's largest producing area. The sector lost 600 jobs from May to June and has lost 10,500 jobs over the last 12 months. We still have a lot of unemployment. We're still getting calls. We're still getting unemployment filings, but things are trending down, he said. What TWC officials statewide and locally are focused on, Taylor said, is upskilling, or helping those who have lost their jobs gain new skills. We're looking at HVAC, diesel technicians, auto technicians, electrical linemen, he said. Statewide plans to reopen schools, including colleges, cold impact training programs, Taylor said. We're paying close attention to how they plan to reopen, he said. As workers return to the workplace, he said child care will be a major issue. Texas is in a tough situation. It's a hot spot for the virus, and people want to do the right thing, he said. Taylor said he is pleased that the Midland-Odessa area seems to be stabilizing, that the labor force also remains steady. That's what's really great, he said. Midland's labor force was 103,625 in June, up from 101,470, but down 6,490 from the 110,115 last June. There were 93,645 Midlanders employed, up from 88,675 in May, but 14,105 less than the 107,750 employed last year. The number of unemployed shrank to 9,980 from 12,795 in May, but is up 7,615 from the 2,365 who were unemployed last June. While the leisure and hospitality sector led with 800 new jobs from May to June, trade, transportation, and utilities followed with 400 new jobs. Gaining 100 jobs each were the manufacturing, professional, and business services, education and health services, and other services sectors. The mining, logging, and construction sector lost 600 jobs from May to June, and the government sector lost 200 jobs for the month. For the 12 months from June 2019 to June 2020, the mining, logging, and construction sector has shed 10,500 jobs, followed by the trade, transportation, and utility sector with 1,100 jobs lost, and the other services sector with 900 fewer jobs. The education and health services sector and the leisure and hospitality sector each lost 400 jobs over the year, and the manufacturing sector 300 jobs. The government sector lost 200 jobs, and the information sector 100 jobs. The professional and business services sector was the only one to add jobs over the year. It gained 200 jobs. Statewide, the unemployment rate dropped to 8.6%, the second consecutive monthly decrease and lowest since March, when the pandemic was just starting to have an impact. The state added 243,900 jobs over the last month. Amarillo reported the lowest unemployment at 6%, followed by Abilene with 6.4%, and Bryan College Station with 6.5%. Midland unemployment, January 2020, 2.4%. January 2019, 2.3%. February 2020, 2.3%. February 2019, 2.2%. March 2020, 3.4%. March 2019, 2%. 10.2%. April 2019, 1.7%. May 2020, 12.4%. May 2019, 1.8%. June 2020, 9.6%. June 2019, 2.1%. Preliminary numbers for June with May numbers. Amarillo, 6. 8.5. Abilene, 6.4. 8.9. College Station, Bryan, 6.5. 8.7. Sherman-Denison, 6.8. 9.6. Lubbock, 6.9. 9.4. Waco, 7.1. 9.7. Wichita Falls, 7.3. 10.1. Austin, Round Rock, 7.5. 11.4. San Angelo, 7.8. 10.7. Killeen, Temple, 7.9. 10.8. Tyler, 8. 11.3. Dallas, Plano, Irving, 8.3. 12.1. Texarkana, 8.3. 10.7. Fort Worth, Arlington, 8.5. 12.6. San Antonio, New Braunfels, 8.5, 12.7, Victoria, 9, 12.8, Longview, 9.1, 12.2, Midland, 9.6, 12.6, El Paso, 9.9, 14.6, Houston, The Woodlands, Sugarland, 9.9, 13.9, Corpus Christi, 10.1, 14.7, Laredo, 10.1, 14.1, Brownsville, Harlingen, 11.2, 16, Beaumont, Port Arthur, 12.8, 17.8, McAllen, Edinburgh, Mission, 12.8, 17.6, Odessa, 13, 16.5. New rules and rates. Utilities. City increases number of lawn watering days, from staff reports. The City of Midland has adjusted the lawn and landscaping watering schedule, which will allow residents to water 4 days a week instead of two. City staff had briefed the City Council of the anticipated changes during a meeting in May. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, according to the City. With the increased number of watering days, customers should decrease the time they water each day, according to a press release. Along with the ability to water more often, the city also is lowering the rate for those who use more than 50,000 gallons a month. In the water conservation plan approved by the Midland City Council last week, that rate drops from $54.02 to $19.65. The twice-a-week water restrictions were put into place after the drought from the previous decade. City officials said in May that two issues came to light since those restrictions and higher rates were put into place. The first was that people watered less, putting less money in the city's water fund, which resulted in less cash on hand to pay for infrastructure, including water main breaks. Second, the city was besieged with those wanting exemptions from rate increases or restrictions. City officials told the council in May there were more than 4,123 water exemptions in place. A new rate system would not allow for exemptions, they said. New water rates. Residential and commercial month base rate includes 2,000 gallons, $21.61. Apartment monthly base rate per unit includes 2,000 gallons, $17.60. Gallons, 2,000 and under, included. Gallons, 2001 to 10,000, $6.11. Gallons, 10,001 to 25,000, $8.03. Gallons above 25,000, $10.80. Residential or commercial lawn meter above 50,000, $19.65. Sewer rates. All customers' month base rate, $21.79. All customers' rate per 1,000 gallons after initial base rate, 2,000 gallons, 88 cents. Source, City of Midland. Oil prices end week above $40 by Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. Despite crossing the $41 level Wednesday, oil prices ended the week weighed down by concerns surging coronavirus cases could undercut an economic recovery. West Texas Intermediate lost 16 cents, or 0.4%, on Friday to close at $40.59 a barrel. Crude ended the week with a 0.1% gain from Monday's $40.10 close. Posted prices ended the week at $37. Natural gas prices also traded in a narrow band, losing a half cent to $1.718 on the NYMEX, down from its Monday close of $1.739. At an online presentation, Ernst & Young leaders noted that WTI ended 2019 at $61.14 a barrel and ended the first quarter of this year at $20.51 a barrel, a plunge of $40.63, or 66%. Ernst & Young also noted that the difference between $40 a barrel oil and $60 a barrel oil is about 20 billion barrels of reserves, or roughly equal to the combined oil reserves of Brazil, 12.6 billion barrels, Norway, 6.4 billion barrels, and the United Kingdom, 2.1 billion barrels. David Johnston, Ernst & Young's U.S. West Energy Strategy and Transactions leader, said out that the U.S. has experienced 10 oil pricing events over the last 50 years and that pricing volatility seems to be coming in shorter cycles. In its market outlook, the company wrote that the theme for the third quarter of 2020 is precarious. While oil markets seem to have recovered somewhat, developments with the pandemic and on the economic front could quickly stall or reverse that recovery. Matching production with demand restoration will be a challenging process, the company said. Bloomberg reported that oil traders were disappointed this week by reports of an unexpected drop in consumer sentiment and the number of COVID-19 cases in the U.S. surpassing 3.6 million. Consumer confidence, with its big miss today, weighed on the earlier optimism that we saw, said Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at Price Futures Group Incorporated, told Bloomberg. There's a concern that after the stimulus checks run out, there's going to be a pullback in retail sales and definitely a pullback in travel by car if people are not going to be working. Bloomberg said U.S. benchmark crude futures are having trouble breaking out of the tight trading range they've been in since early June. Major gasoline-guzzling states, such as Texas and California, are facing a resurgence in COVID-19 cases, squashing demand, while the OPEC Plus alliance is preparing to unleash crude oil back into the market next month. The 200-day moving average for WTI futures around $43 a barrel is keeping a lid on prices from surging higher. John Kilduff, partner at Again Capital LLC, told Bloomberg, "If we can get through that, then you might see some fireworks, some more aggressive buying coming in. But for now, it's sort of a wait and see." Energy. Rig count down for the 19th straight week. By Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. The nation's rig count posted its 19th consecutive weekly decline and reached yet another record low, according to Baker Hughes' weekly rig count. The oil field service company said the U.S. rig count fell 5 rigs to 253 during the week, and now stands 701 rigs below the year-ago level of 954. That 253 is also the lowest since Baker Hughes began its rig count in 1940, and far below the previous low of 404 reached during the 2014-2016 downturn. Texas led declines among the nation's producing states, falling 3 rigs to 104 and coming in 350 rigs below last year's tally of 454 rigs. The Permian Basin also continued to reach record lows, dropping 1 rig to 124. A year ago, there were 440 rigs at work in the region. New Mexico was only one of 2 states to show a gain, adding 1 rig to 50. West Virginia is the other. Eddy County, New Mexico, remained the most active in the Permian with 29 rigs, down 1 for the week. Lee County, New Mexico, followed with 21 rigs, up 2 from the previous week. Loving County reported 15 rigs at work within county lines, unchanged for the week. Midland County reported the basin's largest increase, adding 4 rigs to 14. Martin County was the only other county in the Permian with a double-digit rig count, 11 rigs, down 3 for the week. Glasscock and Reagan counties didn't have activity this week after holding with 1 rig the previous week. Drilling for oil held steady, decreasing by 1 to 180 rigs this week. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas dropped 4 to 71. Gas prices in Midland, 58 cents less than last year, by Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HearstMP.com. The average price of gas climbed 6 cents in Midland this week, according to AAA Texas. The organization reported the rise was 2 cents more than the state average, but a penny less than the rise in Odessa. AAA Texas also reported that 8 other larger metropolitan areas inside the state had larger increases week over week than what was experienced in Midland-Odessa. The largest increase was the 20-cent price hike in El Paso, where the average price jumped from $1.97 to $2.17, the highest average in the state. Odessa has the second highest average, $2.11, and Midland is third, $2.08. Those are the only 3 larger metropolitan areas with average prices at or above $2. This week's report from AAA Texas also showed that the difference in the average in the Petroplex and across the state continues to grow. This week, that difference is 17 cents in Odessa and 16 cents in Midland. 4 weeks ago, that difference was 6 cents in Midland. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. The state average moved from $1.88 to $1.92. AAA Texas reported in its weekly report that drivers around the nation, and in Texas, are filling up with the most expensive gas since mid-March. Market analysts attribute the gradually rising cost to relatively steady demand for gasoline and crude oil prices rising slightly, the report stated. Regional gasoline stock supply dropped to levels not seen since mid-April, according to the latest data from the Energy Information Administration. Across the region, the following averages were reported: $1.84 in Lubbock, an increase of 1 cent; $1.88, Amarillo, an increase of 8 cents; $1.92 in San Angelo, an increase of 2 cents; and $1.98 in Abilene, a decrease of 1 cent. The lowest average in the state was in Lubbock. Drivers in Midland are paying 58 cents less than during the same time last year. The average across the state is down 60 cents year over year. Average gas prices. This week, El Paso, $2.17. Odessa, $2.11. Midland, $2.08. Abilene, $1.98. Corpus Christi, $1.98. State average, $1.92. National average, $2.20. Last week, Odessa, $2.04. Midland, $2.02. Abilene, $1.99. El Paso, $1.97. Texarkana, $1.93. Texas average, $1.88. National average, $2.19. Source, AAA Texas. City, number of July cases nears 700, by Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HearstNP.com. Midland Health Department officials reported 48 new confirmed coronavirus cases on Friday and said that the number of cases in July, 686, is approaching the number of cases in Midland County before the month began, 701. It's likely that the total number of cases could top 1,400 total by Monday, because the city has reported on average of 40.35 cases a day during the month of July. The report Friday also included the following. The number of community-transmitted cases topped 600. 608. The number of 20-somethings and 30-somethings increased by 29, which was more than 60% of all cases Friday. The number of active cases increased to 869. Coronavirus report. Cases Friday, 48. Total cases, 1,387. Total tests, 8,777. Gender. Male, 670. Female, 717. Age range. 0 to 19. Thursday, 148. Friday, 151. 20 to 29, Thursday, 350, Friday, 362, 30 to 39, Thursday, 300, Friday, 317, 40 to 49, Thursday, 198, Friday, 207, 50 to 59, Thursday, 154, Friday, 156, 60 to 69, Thursday, 101, Friday, 103, 70 to 79, Thursday, 49, Friday, 51, 80 plus, Thursday, 39, Friday, 40. Patient status, home isolation, Thursday, 820, Friday, 798. Recovered, Thursday, 475, Friday, 493. Death, Thursday, 25, Friday, 25. Hospital, Thursday, 16, Friday, 19. Under investigation, Friday, 40. Unable to locate, refused. Friday, 9. Nursing rehab, Thursday, 3, Friday, 3. Source of exposure, community transmission, Thursday, 594, Friday, 608. Contact to a known case, Thursday, 526, Friday, 547. Travel related, Thursday, 179, Friday, 181. Under investigation, Thursday, 40, Friday, 42. Unable to locate, refused, Friday, 9. Source, Midland Health Department. Local, face shield donation. Beau Moore, General Sales Manager of Rogers Ford, holds one of the 260 face shields the dealership donated to Midland Memorial Hospital. Rogers also donated 1,080 face masks. A hospital employee was at the dealership to buy a vehicle and told Moore that MMH was in need of masks and shields, according to a press release from Rogers Ford. The healthcare workers go above and beyond for us every day, especially during times like these, so Rogers Ford stepped in to help support them, he said in a statement. To donate supplies to MMH, email ppedonations@midlandhealth.org and include contact information. Museum of the Southwest to host private showings. The Museum of the Southwest is offering private household visits, according to a Facebook post. The museum is opening the Wagner Wing for families to view current exhibitions Lonesome Dove, Buscemi Studios Unlocking Potential, and Largescapes Selections from the permanent collection for private visits. Families can reserve a one-hour block for their household, up to 8 people, to view galleries in an exclusive and socially distanced setting. Only one household is permitted per time slot. Masks are required, and the museum will be cleaned between each visit, according to the Post. The visits are free for museum members and Midland County Public Library cardholders and $15 per household for non-members. Tuesday through July 24 is reserved for museum members only. To reserve tickets, visit museumsw.org. Notes, cards, being collected for MMH. Senior Life Midland is collecting love notes for the healthcare workers at Midland Memorial Hospital to let them know how much they are appreciated. Residents may participate by dropping off a card or note at Senior Life Midland office, 3301 Sinclair Avenue. There will be a box at the front door during business hours. After hours, slide the note, card, under the door, according to a press release from the nonprofit. Messages will be collected through Tuesday. Obituaries. Ernie Albert LaForge. Ernie Albert LaForge, 50, passed away Monday, July 13, 2020, at Midland Memorial Hospital. Ernie was born on November 18, 1969, to Ralph and Kay LaForge in Midland, Texas. He graduated from Midland High School in 1989. He joined the United States Marine Corps June 1990. Ernie served his country honorably until 1994, serving in Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and Operation Hope. His career path followed plumbing and the oil and gas industry. He married Nona Kimbriel in July 1998. He was a caring and loving husband, son, father, and papa. His passions included NASCAR, the Dallas Cowboys, watching baseball, working hard, and ensuring his family was provided for. He was a great father and was happiest while with his children and grandchildren. Ernie is survived by his wife of 22 years, Nona LaForge. His children, Casey and Elizabeth Jones, Shelby and Matthew Chavez, Hayden, Richard LaForge, and Bryce LaForge. His grandchildren, Allie, Charlie, Caleb, Blakely, and David. His mother, Catherine LaForge. His siblings, John and Shannon LaForge, Cynthia LaForge, Alex and Lynn LaForge, Carl LaForge, and several nieces and nephews. Funeral service will be Saturday, July 18, 2020, at 10 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, July 18th, 2020, Section A. MCH Honors Employee Who Died, by Michael Merlot. Medical Center Hospital employees honored their coworker Thursday night and Friday after she died of COVID-19 related complications. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said, "We do a thing for our veterans called an honor walk. We included this employee in that last night, and we lined the halls to honor this individual." MCH reported that the employee and patient was a 49-year-old woman who was not a nurse, but was part of the care team and was one of the health providers, Timmons said. MCH detailed that, as with other patients, her name will not be released. Timmons said that MCH employees are also being provided emotional support and that they have a care support team to set up on debrief sessions throughout the organization on a weekly basis, so that any of our employees, even if it's not during the loss of one of our own, can go and kind of talk through the stresses of work. We have pastoral staff that have been scheduled to come up last night, as well as through today and in future days, to speak with the staff, she said. She said that MCH is going to allow pastoral care in the building starting next week with specific PPE to support patients on Tuesdays and Thursdays. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said during Friday's hospital briefing that MCH has had 816 positive cases and 41 COVID-19 positive patients are in the hospital, including 6 from Sienna Nursing and Rehabilitation, 1 from Focused Care at Odessa, 3 from Fort Stockton, 4 from Andrews, and 1 from Stanton. 12 are on the 7th floor, 14 are on the 8th floor, 9 are in the critical care unit, and 2 of them are reportedly on ventilators. 5 patients are reportedly in the CCU overflow unit, and all of them are on ventilators. No persons under investigation are in the hospital, and 356 tests are pending. One COVID-19 patient is reportedly in the labor and delivery unit at MCH. Timmons said that they will do the same procedures for that patient as they would for any other. In the event this mother went into labor, there's limited people in that room, and we take that baby into the NICU, neonatal intensive care unit, into an isolation room as well, she said. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown said that out of 1,368 people and 261 have been positive, 1,088 negative and 19 are pending. 14 patients are in the hospital and 8 of them are on a ventilator. Brown added that one COVID-19 patient died since Thursday. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan said that ORMC will start screening for every patient who is admitted or having surgery at the hospital for COVID-19. He said that those processes would begin between Friday and next week. Odessa Mayor David Turner said Tuesday night, ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray would announce what the school district would do regarding reopening classrooms. The Ector County Health Department reported that out of the total 2,305 positive COVID-19 cases in the county, 1,575 are confirmed positives, and 730 are probable positives. While 1,225 cases are listed as active on the county website, 1,053 are listed as recovered, and 765 tests are pending. 27 Ector County residents have reportedly died from COVID-19 related complications. For information regarding the city's COVID-19 mobile testing, call 432-582-7969 or go to tinyurl.com/y8a8hz8r. TEA announces additional reopening guidance. Austin. Last week, the Texas Education Agency, TEA, released public health planning guidance for the 2020-21 academic year in order to well prepare students, teachers, and staff to safely return to school campuses for daily in-person instruction. Given the latest developments around COVID-19, TEA is issuing important updates to the guidance. In response to the varying public health realities of each Texas community, these changes give the needed flexibility for schools to effectively provide a smooth transition for students, teachers, and staff so that they will experience the safest and least disruptive mode of learning during the beginning of the school year, a news release said. School systems will now be able to temporarily limit access to on-campus instruction for the first 4 weeks of school. After the first 4 weeks, a school system can continue to limit access to on-campus instruction for an additional 4 weeks if needed, with a board-approved waiver request to the TEA. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray has said, reopening plans will be discussed at the ECISD Board of Trustees meeting 6 p.m. Tuesday in the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston. TEA guidelines include exceptions for students, specifically any family that lacks internet access at home and or requires devices for students learning virtually. Any student requiring on-campus instruction during this period, for instance, those who need reliable access to technology, will still be entitled to on-campus instruction every day during this transition period, the release said. Local school boards for districts in areas with high levels of community spread also retain the flexibility to delay the start of the school year. Additional changes provide school systems with the ability to convert high schools, with school board approval, to a full-time hybrid model once students have transitioned back to on-campus instruction. This model will provide for a more socially distant school experience, where students receive a portion of their instruction on campus and a portion of their instruction remotely at home. 1 week prior to the start of on-campus activities and instruction, school systems must post for parents and the general public a summary of the plan developed in consultation with their teachers, staff, and parents that they will follow to mitigate COVID-19 spread in their schools based on the requirements and recommendations outlined in the TEA's updated public health planning guidance. Quick hits. Trappings of Texas. Trappings of Texas, celebrating its 34th anniversary this year, a distinctive event that showcases a combination of both handmade cowboy gear and Western art. Online sale runs through August 2nd. The show honors the Lone Star State's rich Western heritage, drawing people from as far as Georgia, Florida, New Mexico, and Colorado to the mountains of the Big Bend region. With the challenges that COVID-19 has posed, the event has moved online this year. The show is the major fundraiser for the Museum of the Big Bend, located on the campus of Sol Ross State University in Alpine. For more information, visit museumofthebigbend.com/trappings-of-Texas. Anime Convention. Midessa Anime has been scheduled from noon to 5 p.m. August 14th through 16th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th. Show hours, noon to 2 a.m. August 14th, 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. August 15th, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. August 16th. There will be celebrity voice actors, shop at an exclusive anime merchants and artists booth, idol performances, panels, concerts, workshops, meetups, and more. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/y6wm63rw. Test Company CEO says COVID learning loss is fixable, by Ruth Campbell. Learning loss during school closures due to the COVID-19 pandemic was the subject of an ECISD live broadcast with Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray and Chris Minnick, CEO of the nonprofit testing company NWEA. The Thursday evening broadcast was seen on multiple ECISD platforms. Our organization works with about 10,000 school districts and charter schools across the country, Minnick said. We give assessments in reading, language usage, math, and science to students, and we have academic data on how those students have done over time. What we did in our research is we looked at what could be the result of not being in school for a long time, and what types of things should school districts be looking at. As we know, there might be hybrid opportunities, online opportunities for students in the coming year. What types of things should schools be considering based on the data that we have? The data show that students may not suffer just 3 months worth of learning loss, but it could be significant. In normal times, according to a slide shown during the broadcast, the instructional levels needed in an average fifth grade classroom span more than 7 grade levels. Teachers may have 32.9% at a fourth grade level, 32.7% at a third grade level, 23.9% at a fifth grade level, 1.2% at sixth grade, 4.4% at seventh grade, 3.1% at 8th grade, and 1.8% at high school level. Losses seen 5 or 6 months out in reading, Minnick said, could be anywhere from a half grade level to about two-thirds of a grade level. This isn't to scare anybody, he said. It's just the reality that many of our students weren't as engaged as they could have been. And frankly, online learning has its pluses and minuses. We see a bigger gap at the earlier grades. In the third grade, the slide is greater than in the eighth grade. That's something that has shown up in multiple places across the country. Minnick said the antidote to learning loss is students spending time with teachers. The data also showed districts should probably focus most on elementary level students because older students are more adaptable to online learning. The reason we're seeing loss is students at lower grades need time with teachers learning some of the basic skills, Minnick said. He said the math data is a bit more stark. Math builds on itself, so if you miss something in an earlier grade, then you're really going to struggle in third grade. In most states, you're talking some set of fractions, parts of a whole, which is challenging to learn online, Minnick said. Third, fourth, and fifth grade math is what Minnick said he is most worried about. I think especially in mathematics, the more we can do to look at the gaps that have been created, not the wholesale reteach the previous grade. But think about the skills students may not have received toward the end of the school year last year and really accommodate for those, he said. Minnick said his company used data from the 2017-18 school year and assessed about 10 million students nationwide, or about 25% of youngsters across the country. We used broad data when looking at this. We made sure that it was a representative sample, so it was a very large sample size. It enabled us to see where kids were at the end of that school year and then where they started the next one. He added that he thinks it's important to have a chance to meet students where they are. They might have had a bad summer. They might be dealing with trauma in their lives. I believe in my heart education is the great equalizer. It creates opportunity for kids, Minnick said. When you look at this data, we're suggesting if we don't take this seriously, we will have large learning loss, Minnick said. For interventions, he suggests engaging with students online whenever possible, getting parents engaged with their students, even if it's just conversations about mathematics, like prices at the supermarket. Talk to them about dollars and cents, Minnick said. Make it into a math problem. There are small things we can do as parents and educational leaders to help kids grow over time. Minnick said figuring out how to get data on where students are quickly is going to be really important for teachers. Murray asked about using the MAP test to see where students are when they first return to school. I can't tell you what the right thing is. What I can tell you is until you have information on where your kids are, you're just going to have to assume you know where they are. So that's the thing that we're trying to break down, Minnick said. As quickly as the district feels comfortable and they have tended to social emotional learning, making sure students are safe and have access to food, the first priority should be figuring out where students are, he said. Minnick said academic loss is fixable. If your child misses something over the summer, it's really going to be okay. There are things you can do as a parent, and we're doing in our house. Get your kid into books that are at the right level for them, Minnick said. In the upper grades, he said, figure out what a student's passion is and engage them in things that are meaningful to them. He added that there is a lot of good content online right now, and that his house, they just do 15 minutes at a time online and move on. For math, they use Khan Academy and the local library when it's open for books. I would just again stress, don't worry. It's going to be okay. Do everything you can to get them interested in things that will further their education, Minnick said. Murray added that the Texas Education Agency has resources online as well. Death notice for Saturday, July 18th. Elvira F. Williams. Elvira F. Williams, 96, of Crane, died Thursday, July 16th in Crane. Mass was celebrated Saturday, July 18th at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Private interment will be held at a later date at the church columbarium, with Father Mark Woodruff officiating. Arrangements are by Schaefer Nichols Funeral Home of Crane.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, July 19th, 2020. Section A, Business. $2 million plus PPP loan saves jobs at Agitech by Mila McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. As the novel coronavirus epidemic spread around the globe in early March, crude oil demand fell off the cliff as economies shut down and governments issued stay-at-home orders. Executives at Midland's Agitech Energy Services could see the cliff looming. Oil prices dropped. We saw our customers reacting quickly. They got cautious, They got conservative, said Mark Gonzalez, vice president of finance. Customers looked at the economics of repairs and asked the company for price reductions. Agitech had limited access to customers as everyone stayed home. The week of spring break in mid-March, the company saw revenues dive 70% from 2019 levels, said Steve Baronis, chief financial officer and owner of the company, along with Mark Bales and Marshall Bales. Revenues remained down about 50% from 2019 levels. As company executives saw the approaching decline, Baronis said the painful decision was made to reduce headcount at its operations in Midland, Sundown, and Hobbs. The company reduced its employee numbers by 25%. We didn't want to let anyone go, but for the good of the whole, we had to cut those spots, he said. In the previous downturn, we had stubbornly held people longer than we should have, and it made the recovery more difficult. At the same time, executives became aware of federal government plans to provide financial assistance during the slowdown, including the Paycheck Protection Program of forgivable loans through the Small Business Administration. Baronis and Gonzalez said it was a topic of discussion at the office and at their homes. Because the company has a close relationship with its bank and communicates almost daily, Baronis said all the financial information needed for the application was available. As a result, he said the company's application for PPP funding was submitted just as applications were being taken on April 3rd. By the next Monday, word was received the application had been accepted, and by April 17th, the company received just more than $2 million from the program. Subsequent changes to program rules had the company scrambling to update its plans for the funds, the men said. We knew if we used the funds for regular payroll and other allowable expenses during the 8-week time period allotted, we would not be able to utilize all the funds, Baronis said. We wanted to be sure that we maximized the use of the loan to compensate employees that had been significantly impacted by the COVID-19 and commodities-driven downturn as much as possible. Employees who normally would work 60 to 70 hours a week had their hours cut to 35 or 40 hours. Baronis estimated that of Agitech's hourly employees, more than half took 25% pay cuts as a result of the decreased hours. So the company pursued a plan that would raise the pay of administrative staff and field and operations staff back up to the maximum amount allowed under PPP provisions for the 8-week period in which the funds were designated for spending. They devised a supplemental pay program to be executed over the 8-week period to help fill the shortfall in employee paychecks from what they were accustomed to receiving before the downturn. We told employees we're supplementing your pay to the maximum amount we can, Gonzalez said. Things are still going to be tough, so be smart with your supplemental pay. We don't know what the workload will look like on the backside of the 8-week PPP period. That was being done for 6 weeks. As Baronis explained, another rule change meant the funding didn't have to be spent during the 8 weeks. Instead, they could use the funds through the end of the year. So it was decided that the remaining PPP funds would be set aside for payroll to help the company weather the expected continued decrease in revenues. During the initial 8-week PPP period, company executives had discussed an additional 25 job cuts, but because of the PPP funds, they opted to save all positions they had in anticipation of revenue climbing back up to pre-COVID levels. Without those PPP funds, we would have had to evaluate and make some really tough decisions regarding personnel. Baronis said the company has been seeing the time between when it submits invoices and when it receives payment stretch from the normal 30 to 60 days to 60 to 90 days, meaning the cash flow it had been receiving was from December, January, and February when business was still healthy. Through the rest of the year and into the early year, he said the company's cash flow will reflect the significant downturn of March, April, May, and beyond. The key for us now is consistency in our work levels, knowing what we need staff-wise as opposed to cutting back and then not having what's needed to service the customers. Said Gonzalez, we're still feeling the effects of the downturn, but there are signs of improvement. There is optimism, but uncertainty. There's certainly some chatter as to opportunities, he said. I feel like we have to operate a lean business and be mindful of where we're spending money and be efficient with our people and our time. Commentary. Bar Owners Want to Be Heard by Erica Mann from The Blue Door. Today marks the 87th day our business has been forcefully closed. 87 out of 116 days that we have not been allowed to generate sales or income, and 80 days that an entire industry has been dismissed, ignored, and shackled without due process by Governor Abbott and his strike force team. Texas bars, their owners, employees, vendors, cleaning staff, and musicians are being discriminated against and decimated. While the governor and his team still receive checks, we are applying for unemployment. We are taking out loans we can't afford. We are losing health insurance. We are draining safety nets and savings. We are riddled with anxiety, stress, and sleepless nights. Understand that we can take this virus very seriously while still operating the businesses that we pay taxes on and that keep a roof over our heads. I can't speak for every bar, but I can speak for most. We trusted Governor Abbott's judgment, and we followed his directives. When threatened with TABC checking up on bars, we welcomed it because we knew we were operating as safely as possible under the circumstances. While some bars weren't complying, let's be honest, there are many restaurants, venues, and box stores that aren't complying either. Why not hold the bad actors in every industry accountable and let the others earn a living? Instead, Governor Abbott has chosen to make a moral judgment and to pick and choose where to place the blame. He is crippling and destroying businesses, families, and futures in the process. When our industry was shut down a second time, we were given a 3-hour notice. That was 25 days ago. We have not heard from our governor. We have not been given the dignity or grace of a conversation or an estimation of a timeline. Instead, we have been threatened that if we do anything to try to eke out some sales, we will lose our liquor license. Anyone who knows me knows my adoration for this great state, but this hardly feels like the Texas I know and love. This is what I know. If our leaders truly believe that we can't operate safely, then they must provide relief until we are allowed to reopen. Our property has essentially been seized, and we demand compensation until it is released back to us. Our expenses did not go away when they ordered us to shut our doors. Our expenses did not go away during the 87 days of being forcefully closed. Our expenses have not stopped, even if hope sometimes has. Once again, we have been put in the position of groveling to our elected officials to either let us work or to provide us compensation so that we, our staff, and our businesses can survive. Please, fellow Texans, spread this message far and wide. Share on social media. Send it to anyone you believe has the power to help. For 87 days, we have felt voiceless. Help us be heard. Business. Preschool uses PPP loan to keep teachers employed. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. After being forced to close its doors because of the coronavirus pandemic, a Midland preschool used the federal government's Paycheck Protection Program to keep teachers from being laid off or furloughed. Holy Trinity Preschool closed in March following spring break, along with most schools and daycare facilities, according to the Reverend Bob Hennigan, rector at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. The school briefly reopened before closing again for the summer. Hennigan said that after losing those months of tuition payments, paying preschool employees likely would have depleted the church's savings had it not received a 3P loan. We certainly needed it, he said. There's always a couple of months in the summer when we have to use money in reserves. Without the 3P, we would have possibly had to use all the reserves. The Holy Trinity Episcopal qualified for a loan between $150,000 and $350,000, according to data released by the Small Business Administration. Eligible businesses were given a range and were able to receive a loan anywhere between the minimum and maximum values. Hennigan said they borrowed $165,000 to pay the salaries of their 34 preschool employees for the months of June and July. Several other churches received loans through the 3P program as well, including Crestview Baptist, First Methodist, and Mid-Cities Church. Some private schools also used the federal loans to subsidize employee incomes. In a statement to the Reporter-Telegram, a spokeswoman for Trinity School said the school used the program to pay the salaries of about 150 employees. COVID-19 and the decline in the economy in general create huge uncertainties for independent schools like ours, which are dependent on tuition revenue, said Marketing Director Brandy Cooper. Through the 3P grant, we are doing our part to ensure that highly educated professionals can remain in the Midland area for both the short and long term. Trinity School borrowed between $1 million and $2 million, according to the SBA data. The SBA data shows more than 600 businesses in Midland received $150,000 or more from the program, and about 25,000 jobs were retained because of it. Businesses that receive the loans are not required to pay them back. Instead, they will be paid with taxpayer money.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.